Think about a Nokia or a BlackBerry or Kodak, you know, giant brands. Wow, man. But where are they now? Where are they now? Because the world changed like that. You know, it went digital. It went from Kodak said, no, it's all about film. And BlackBerry said, no, it's all about a physical keyboard. And Nokia said, no, it's all about menus. And they didn't see the value of the market.
Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec. Thank you for listening to the show. I would love if you could give us your opinion on how you felt about the show, your experience that you have in regards to what we've been talking about. I am having an absolute blast, but your input is like dynamite on that explosion. So give us your input. We'd love to hear from you. Any questions, comments, concerns, give us everything you got. We love it. Thanks. Hope you're having an awesome day. Welcome to the Business Ownership Podcast, brought to you by Awareness Strategies, helping you navigate the waters between entrepreneurship and ownership. Hey there, peeps. This is Michelle Nedelec, and I'm super glad that you're here with us today because I'm here with my most amazing guest, Sanjeev. Sanjeev, thank you so much for being here with us today.
It's a joy. Thank you, Michelle. I've been looking forward to this.
Awesome. So give us a highlight of who you are and what you do for business.
Wow. I'm trying to work all of that stuff out, really. listen, the story goes back.
Well, just give us a little wait a bit. Give us your kind of your name, your business. What do you do?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sanjeev. Sanjeev Lumba is my name. People call me a transformationalist, futurist. I help organizations and people shape their strategies, their leadership. I've written my book and my method, which is called Valuepreneurship, is the guiding method. So that's what keeps me having fun all the time.
I love it. So now we get to go into your history. How did you get into kind of business strategies as a thing and what you do?
Cool. Actually, it goes back to when I was 21, and I was training to be an accountant, a chartered accountant, and I was a junior auditor. And I used to end up, I think I had a disease, which I call potentialitis. I couldn't help seeing potential, you know, and I'd spend time with my clients saying, hey, look, there's potential in this market, or you can open up business here, or you know, here's a product you can do, or here are processes. And so I was constantly, I seemed to have this kind of, as I call it, a disease. And my managers used to get really upset. And they used to say, hey, Sanjeev, here's the red pen, here's the blue pen, you tick and bash, you're an auditor, you know? So that, and that gave me the taste that I think I was made to do what I do. So yeah, then I literally quit the day I qualified, and I went on to do an MBA. I've made some pretty stupidly, daringly amazing moves, but you know, they all seem to have paid off. And then I went into industry after I did an MBA, and then I went into industry. And the temptation, of course, was to go into consulting and so on with the way I was going. But I have this very clear understanding that I don't have any right to say any of this stuff to anyone unless I've had the opportunity to be able to do it myself for companies that I've worked for, or my client companies, or my own company. I shouldn't be allowed to say anything. So I went into industry, and that was really my university, as finance director, marketing director, strategy, and then business economics, and head, and then and CEO of different companies. So that really, that all that corporate career and the stuff that happened and the kind of changes that I saw and the results that I saw happening made me look and say, the world has got this wrong. They've just got it the wrong way around. We're over concerned with the me. We're over concerned with how much I can sell, how much I can make. And we're missing the point. Because the question is, who would you buy from? Would you rather buy from someone who's trying to sell to you and is wanting to win a contract from you? Or would you buy from the person who is oblivious of themselves and completely obsessed with you, your value, and the changes that, you know, the world is making on your priorities and shaping your value, if you like? It's a kind of no-brainer. And who are you going to argue more on prices with? you know, who I call the entrepreneur. And entrepreneurs are brilliant. But I think I'm seeing them, or at least what I'm contributing to, is evolving them from being entrepreneurs to becoming valuepreneurs. Because the entrepreneur says, what product can I make? How much can I sell? How much money can I make? The valuepreneur starts by saying, who's out there? What's shifting their values? And then and only then sets about saying, how can I use my talent, my skills, my knowledge, my products, my services to make an impact on that? So it's depth of impact. So that's been my driving thing. And for the last 27 years, ever since 24 years, since I quit corporate life, I've been helping corporations, people, individuals, hundreds of companies, thousands of people to shape their strategy, their leadership themselves in a way where they're seeing the world from the right way around. So whether it's parts of Johnson & Johnson or small SMEs and so on. And it's been an incredible journey. And, you know, so here I am.
Nice. I love it. So when it comes to SMEs or small mid-sized enterprises, how do they, or do you see them differing in how they operate and how they run than, say, the Johnson & Johnsons in the world?
The one and only fundamental difference is that the decision making is much closer to the action. There's no question about that. And in a giant corporation, that distance between the action and decision making is further away. So you go through many hoops and many steps, and then politics and over processes come in the way, and so on. So the total engagement of the whole 200,000-300,000 people, you know, a million people working in that organization becomes a lot more difficult. Whereas in a smaller organization, because that distance between action and decision is much, much shorter, then you can swing and you can pivot. But then it comes with its own challenges, obviously, you know, because resource availability is the classic one, absolute classic one. Urgencies seem to eat up our resolve to plan and develop and grow and evolve people and so on. And that gets compromised. That gets compromised in medium and small-sized companies, whereas strategically, I suppose, a company like Johnson & Johnson has a lot more muscle to be able to strategize and to set the ship's direction for a longer time. So I think it's really pluses and minuses, but I see the power and the real beauty of this valuepreneurial thinking sitting in small and medium-sized companies, because they have the flexibility to be able to shift and change at the drop of a hat. I mean, if you think about this, think about a Nokia or a BlackBerry or Kodak, you know, giant brands. Wow, man. But where are they now? Where are they now? Because the world changed like that. You know, it went digital. It went from Kodak said, no, it's all about film. And BlackBerry said, no, it's all about a physical keyboard. And Nokia said, no, it's all about menus. And they didn't see the value of the market. And that is my work with SMEs and mid-sized companies and entrepreneurs to say, guys, you've got, and I'm showing them, and I'm working a lot with them, and I'm on, I'm non-executive director on some of these as well. That the whole thing is, if we can get our finger on the, not if, when we get our finger on the pulse of the button of the changing nature of what I call value onions in my model, which is the total set of values of your customers, and you've decided who to serve. This is another thing. So you've decided who to serve. You work out their value onions. We calculate the value. This is not, you know, it's taken my book out of 550 pages. The first 110 pages is dedicated to actually understanding what value is, because we got this wrong.
And I was going to say, I have a question for you, and I think it's going to lead into what into the value onions, as you put it, all of a sudden, and it's the big companies may have a slow boat kind of changing system, and you know, it's like trying to turn the Titanic, we've all heard it, but then the small companies also tend to have shiny objects in them where they're not creating a what you may call a value system
in order to structure their decision processes differently. Because I've noticed as a tech company, without understanding what influences are happening in the back end of tech, and you know, what does this decision that I'm making on the front end, how does that impact the back end? And it's almost like they can pivot, but they don't realize that there's this whole shift of everything else in the background that has to kind of turn about face as well, especially as they're growing their company. They're still making decisions as kind of the entrepreneur. It's me, myself, and I can do whatever I want. And not realizing that, hey, this is actually a business decision and it affects our strategy. It's not just a flippant decision that you get to make. It is, but the aftermath is going to be a little more than you expected. So I'm assuming that your value onions are affecting that and how they then make decisions in order to be able to kind of slow them down a little bit in order to make sure that they're valuable decisions in the business long run, or am I off key?
No, you're absolutely there. I mean, Michelle, I couldn't agree with you more. The thing, you said it beautifully. Look, here's the thing. As owners of SMEs and of, like your technology enterprise, we become quite precious about what we're doing. And that's not a bad thing. It's coming from a beautiful place. It's coming from a place of great invention and great brain power and thinking and creativity and all that kind of stuff. It absolutely is coming from a wonderful place. The problem with it is that we take so much ownership of it, that of what we're creating and what we're inventing, that we start becoming precious and almost defensive about it. And then when we become defensive about it, we automatically close our eyes to what the market is and how it's shaping and how it's changing. So many ideas are, so many examples I can share one or two with you are just coming out of my mind. And when we become precious about and hold on to what we've done, what we know and our expertise, we stop listening. And when we stop listening, we're cooked.
Well, and I'll give you a good example, because I saw a meme on Facebook, I'm sure, the other day, of a white paper done, I think it was Kodak, and I think it was in the 70s. They were doing some technology on being able to make a camera that you could just, that somebody could just hold and click, like a one-click camera, which back then was kind of sort of unheard of. I mean, you had the little ratchety ones, but they were developing something more along the technology lines, and they completely bypassed it and went, yeah, that'll never catch on. It's like, that actually would have changed your entire company.
Absolutely. What a good example. And this, that will never catch on, came from, fear of, am I going to be able to put this out in the market? But but if we'd listened to the way the market was changing, there's a beautiful documentary of Steve Jobs called The Billionaire Hippie. I don't know if you've seen it. And it's like 45 years ago or something when they were developing the mouse, or should I say copying the mouse? Anyway, I should be careful here. but when they were developing the mouse, and it's a super image. It's a real video when he had long hair and he's sitting there. And there on the whiteboard, you've got Steve Wozniacki and all the techies writing algorithm after algorithm after algorithm, and they just, the fumes are coming out of their brains. And here's this guy, the big man on the other side of the room, rocking in a chair on his own. And he's playing with something imaginary on his jeans. You know, it could be like a mouse. And his eyes are like this, and he's out of that room. He's not in that room. And his mind is, what problem of whom am I fixing over here? He's not thinking mouse. He's thinking, and I always say that Steve Jobs never made product. And people challenge me and say, whoa. What was the iPod and the iMac and the this and the iPhone and everything? None of these are products. Mm-hmm. They are perfect responses to perfectly, obsessively understanding the value in the shape of the change in the nature of the marketplace. This is what about? I was working with I'm non-executive director on a company, one of the biggest wine retailers in the UK, and they're suffering badly. They were suffering badly, because 90% of their business was through supermarkets. They were selling their wine through the supermarkets. What differentiation can you get? It is none. It's literally stacked up because, and I said on the first day of our strategy session, I was running a strategy session for the team, the management team. And I said, guys, what would it take for someone to move from a 9-pound bottle to an 11-pound bottle? Because that margin differential would add something like 18% EBITDA. And they were kind of silent. And they said, you know what, Sanjeev, not much. I said, not much, then what? And they said, if they knew what was inside the bottle. Now there we have a value onion point on the outer layer. It's nothing to do with wine. If I knew what was in the bottle, I would be, because the thing is that if I'm inviting the in-laws, I'll go to the top of the shelf. If my son's friends are coming for a football match, I'll go to the bottom of the shelf. It's a very simple way of buying, you know, wine, which is nothing. And these guys, to come back to your point, they had a passion about wine. They were so knowledgeable about wine. They knew all the growers, and they had so oodles of responses, but they were selling through a channel where no value was being discovered, leave alone being added. And to cut a long story short, we came up with a strategy to say, just based on that, if they knew what was in the bottle. So now we're attaching to value. And we came up with a strategy called wine in tube. And you imagine getting a box of a test tube with 5 test tubes, beautiful crystal test tubes, by the way, of 30 cl of wine, of different wines. And you're tasting that, and you're watching with a link on YouTube, someone saying to taste that one, and have you tried that one with cheese, and this is what it means. And then you order from there. And, you know, completely, it was hitting the value of knowing what was in the bottle. And not only you go from 9 to 11, but 9 to 15. Can you imagine what that adds to EBITDA?
Right. Well, and even if they were including, you know, the case of the test tubes with it, especially as an initial offer and a lunch program, I mean, you're getting an entirely different market base off of that. And I love your story because it, to me, and I'm going to back up to the whole Steve Jobs things, is he was competing against Microsoft, but in his mind, he was, you do you, and there's this whole other market that just doesn't do tech like you do, which is that whole, it to this day, it was brilliant marketing because the techies are still in love with their Microsofts because they get to go into the systems, they get to go and muck it up, they get to go and they have control where they need control. And the people who don't want control have no clue how it works. They don't want control. They don't want to know how it works. They just want to be able to go and, you know, make a pretty picture and do the things that Apple does very well. Like, yeah. It comes with software that you could make anybody an artist, and it's like, this is fantastic. But don't think about changing any of your options or your control features, because that's not going to happen, right? And it's understanding that market, and the same with the wine. And so many times I see the business owners, especially if they've been good at a niche, and then they go, hey, I could do this too. I'm going to go start my own company in, you know, whatever it is that they do, the whole e-myth prodigy yeah. child starting yeah. their own company, they get way too obsessed with their competency and yeah. thinking that competency has to come out to the market when that's not really what the market wants at Absolutely. All in any way, shape, or form.
Beautiful, beautifully said. And making that competency turn into a desperation of results. So you see,
say on the one hand, that was a good line, and I think we'll use that one.
On the one hand, you have competency. On the other hand, you've got the results because you're a startup, you're a small business owner. You've got to generate those results fast enough so that the cash is carrying on coming and being able to invest. And so what happens, we start pushing that competency with desperation, and it becomes about me. And the number of salespeople who go out talking about themselves, I've got this, I've got that, look at my products. And before you know it, before even the customers open their mouth, they're already into offering discounts and stuff because there's a desperation to generate results. is a crying shame. And I'm saying that, guys, you are bigger than that. You really are. This is not some sort of a moral lecture. This is what I do day in and day out. And, you know, oodles and oodles of examples that are in my mind of companies who we've got there, who've done it. Why? Because courageously, they shut. They just for a while put aside what they know and obsessively went and looked at the market. It's I'm doing this for a travel organization right now, you know, who have been resisting on going online. They still have loads of travel agencies, and you know what's going to happen.
You're like, you know? I don't know. I think this internet thing's here to stay.
Exactly. You know, but it's kind of, no, my grandfathers did this. We are a travel agent. But now getting them online and becoming an OTA or online travel agency, we've done an analysis of which market they so this is in the UAE. So you start having people, when you start looking at your market and you start saying, right, here's a collection of people who go for Hajj, to, you know, for the religious prayers and so on. Here's a group of expatriates who go back home, and the moment you start doing that, you identify incredible sets of values which have nothing to do with travel, and suddenly now they've got those offers that are coming up on their online channels and things like that, and you know, business booms. It's kind of a no-brainer. I'm not saying anything new. People are probably looking at this and thinking, yeah, but Sanjeev, what you're saying is age old. Yes, it is. Nothing about what I'm saying is new. Valuepreneurship is not new. It's my word, you know. That's pretty cool. But there's nothing new about this. But what is new, Michelle? And this is why we're having this great discussion. The example you gave of Apple and Microsoft. The what is new about this is that in my humble experience of having taken hundreds of companies and worked with them and re-strategized, whether it's the giants or SMEs, and thousands of individuals, and I say this with incredible gratitude and humbleness and modesty, just to share, that what I see is that people have the right ideas, but when it comes down to the action, that's when it goes back, revert to type. So if I say to a sales guy today, hey, what's selling? No one in today's day and age is going to say to me, oh, selling, yes, Sanjeev, that's about taking a suitcase full of your products and services and going and opening it up and showing it to your customers and saying, look what I've got, and here's a discount, and you can buy, look what you can buy, and I can do you a special deal. No one says that. Everyone says, oh, selling, yes, it's about listening to your market. So everyone is giving the right answer, but no one is doing it. When it comes to doing it, and that's where the likes of Steve Jobs and so on, and it's hardly a surprise. And like you said, you've got to choose your markets. And he had the courage to kick the whole corporate world. So it was the biggest volume market available to him. And he had the courage to say, I'm not interested. And he went is it surprising that and they became the richest company in the first trillion and the first $2 trillion company in the world? Hardly surprising. It's that obsession for, I'm sad to say that Apple are riding on that legacy, I'm afraid. And, you know, I think they'll need to do something dramatic to move from here, because they're turning into another corporation. They've got people. I mean, I use Apple mainly, but every time I change my MacBook Air or whatever, I think, I wish it had a touchscreen. I wish it had that. They're not serving my values, but somehow I'm still there because of this legacy. So it's a good. So I have my methods, my technique of understanding value, understanding first of all who you can serve, on whose value. And again, I call that value onion, because it value is increasing as you're going out in the layers. On whose value is my talent going to have the biggest depth of impact? So I'm speaking about depth of impact. Where do my responses have the big, and I choose those markets. Not I don't choose markets to say, oh, there's a lucrative one, there's a fast-growing one. That's nonsense. Otherwise, Steve Jobs would have gone for the corporations.
But where clearly, corporations have way more money to spend on computers, especially back then, than your average person did, for sure.
Yeah. So where can I make a bigger depth of impact? And that's where and you know what? The joy, Michelle, of when I see companies that I work with, when I see how not only they make a lot more money and they grow and things like that, doing valuepreneurship and using the methods and techniques and models that we do. But there's just something else that happens. The level of joy goes up. You know, we talk about purpose of work. And if you say to someone, what's the purpose of your work? And a lot of people will say, well, of course, to make a good career, to make a lot of money. Really? No. Then you are creating a desperation and you're creating an expectation and you're going to become a desperado. Everything is going to be in the me. You're going to be pushed more into the me world and you're going to stop listening more. Actually, our purpose of our work, the purpose of our education, the purpose of our talent is only one. And that is, it's not what it is, but it's the impact that it makes on others during the course of my work, my life. Would you agree with me?
Absolutely, I would. And I think coming kind of almost full circle to your point earlier is a lot of businesses as the toddler's children go without shoes, we have this interesting ability to look at information like you're giving us, go through it all, and then all of a sudden a decision has to be made, like a commitment to the decision has to be made, and things pivot. And I've seen this time and time again, going through even my own work as a business strategist, as a marketing specialist, when it comes to my own business, all of a sudden there's this pivot at the end going, oh no, and we're going to go back to being a tech company. It's like, okay, how many times do I have to do that before I realize, hey, that's not the thing that people are interested in, because it's like even corporations, right? It's always about the end decision that they want to make and where they want to take their business. We do it through tech, but it's got nothing to do with tech. Just like Apple does it with tech, but they're not selling tech.
How beautiful. I love this that you, when, and especially you touched me when you said that I pivot and I think, should I go back to being a tech company? How beautiful, I love what you said. I was doing a strategy program for an IT company. I've done a lot for technology companies. I mean, all industries. But and I said to them, guys, what business are you in? And someone said, well, you know, we are doing digital transformations, and we use sometimes agile methodology and sometimes waterfall methodology and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, they're telling me all about the brilliance and technique. And I yawned. And I said, look, you know, if that is what you're saying and that's what your team and that's what everyone is thinking, then you're going to remain a desperado. Exactly. It's yawnful. It's yawnful. And the end result of it was that you are actually an enabler of product launches, faster product launches of your client companies, or getting your client companies to be far more compliant and not lose $1 million when they're fined. You know, that's the level. Can I tell you a little story?
It's actually
in the book. This is my favorite story about valuepreneurship, nice. And tech. And a few years, about just before COVID, I was in Frankfurt and I was teaching a group of youngsters from one of the top five tech companies in the world. And these are the selected top talent youngsters in their kind of late 20s, early 30s, who are being, you know, spotlighted for future leadership and stuff. I was having a great time. 17 of them from all across Europe. There were French and Norwegian and everyone. Anyway, we were in Frankfurt, sitting literally on the Main River. And I said, guys, and I turned to one young lady and I said, Clara, what are you working on? And she said, I'm working on a project doing digital applications. And again, I had the same reaction that you did. And I yawned, you know. and then I said, Clara, who for? It was a better question, a better answer. She said, well, for our banking clients. And I said, not bad, but I yawned again. And then I said, Clara, why? And she didn't have an answer. And she said, Sanjeev, I don't understand what you mean. Why? I'm working for this top five company, and I'm a specialist in digital apps, and I'm on a project for bank. I don't know what you mean. Why? And I said, it's time for lunch. And it was. And at lunchtime, I was speaking to her boss's boss, her Uber boss, who's a client of mine, a friend of mine. And I said, Klaus, he's a vice president of that company. I said, Klaus, what is Clara working on? And do you know what, Michelle? Even from him, I had to pull it out. Anyway, came back. But, you know, bless him, it's no one's fault, by the way. None of what I'm saying is anyone's fault. It's coming from super intentions, on the contrary. Anyway, we came back from lunch and I said, Clara, do you know what you're working on? Your client is one of the biggest banks in South Africa. I was just going to name them. It's one of the biggest retail banks in South Africa. They found a new market segment, which is poor farmers and tradespeople in the far-flung villages of South Africa. They don't have credit lines. So to buy his fertilizer and feed, they take their money they've stashed up under the pillow and take a two-day perilous journey to Joburg, and then buy the feed and fertilizer and take a two-day perilous journey back. You know, and if they don't get robbed on the way, they come back. And you're like,
what century are we in?
You know, and yeah. I know, this is the truth. And he's losing 4 days of yield on his farm. So your app solves that. So never say to me, if someone says to you, what are you doing? And never say, I'm developing digital applications. You know, go to that level and say, I'm saving 4 days of yield to poor farmers in South Africa. And this is not just about poor farmers. You could be talking about wealthy people. But, you know, that evening, they invited me for dinner. We went to Sachsenhausen, a beautiful area. And in Frankfurt, we were all having dinner. And Michelle, all 17 of them, they were buzzing. They didn't want to talk about Bayern Munich and football or anything like that. They all wanted to discuss what is the impact of their work today and how do they see the impact of their talents in the future.
Nice.
It's as simple as that. And the work didn't change, by the way.
It's as simple as that. Can you say that? And it's not simple. It's, well, I mean, it is for you because you see things from a perspective. And your first point, you're seeing the potential that a business has. And I think we get so down in the weeds of what we're doing that we don't see the potentiality of what we're doing. We see the roots and the roots are growing and that's all we see. We don't see the farmland. We don't see the impact. We don't see where it's going. And the stories that come out of that, because instant banking for people, and people are taking this, like, it drives me crazy that everybody's going, well, you know, women's rights, like, what is that really? And I said, you do realize that women haven't been allowed to have their own bank accounts for like more than 40 years, even America.
Yeah.
You do realize that in Africa right now, women can't get a bank account. You do realize that people don't have access to the things that you take for granted. Of course, I can, you know, get a visa and I can buy my runners wherever I want to. Those simple amenities that people have and take for granted, everything we take for granted, somebody else is not taking for granted. And I think if we can look at what we take for granted in our business and realize that that is phenomenal and amazing and uproarious to somebody else, right? To be able to even, you know how to set up a website in a day going, what? You can do that? What? No, I can accept money online? What?
Yeah, like you said, which century are we living in? But one thing really that I want to just pick up on, and I'm saying this, please understand, for you and for all your listeners, that I'm saying this not flippantly, but having again had the opportunity to work with hundreds of organizations, thousands of people, and getting them there, that it is easy. And I'm kind of authorizing myself to say that, and in its 550 pages in all its glory, loads of stories are in there that this is what happened. But not only the stories, not only the philosophy, but the step by step methodology, and I see it happening every day, and it's a mindset number one. Because the more that we are in fear, the more that we are in expectation, the more that we are in our, like we started this conversation, in the defensiveness of what I do and what I have and the meanness, I'm missing the opportunity out there, which is absolutely crazy, crazy. If there's any doubt about that, please, of course, you're most welcome to reach out. But have a look. It's in there, step by step.
Nice. I love it. So talk to me about the book, because I think it is crucial. And what I'm hearing from you say is that the book helps you to get past that point where the commitment has to be made. Do not revert back into how it was. And don't misword it such that it becomes boring again. It's kind of pulling it past through to that transition point of your clients. So kind of what are the steps that you take us through in the book, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So the book is in 5 sections, and that's kind of going to give you the steps as well. It's in 5 sections, approximately 100, 110 pages or whatever it is per section. But the point is this, it starts first in the first section by setting up the whole understanding of what value actually is, because we're very misguided about this one word, which is a gigantic word, and we are completely confused and lost about what it means. Some people think it's moral values. I'm not talking about moral values. I love moral values, but that's not what I'm talking about here. People talk about, is it added value? Absolutely not, because added value is a bribe. It is a bribe. Added value is, I'll give you a little bit more product, a little bit more service for no more money. And, you know, you take your car for a wash and you take your car for a service and someone washes it for you. That is added. It's nice until the next garage picks it up and drops it back as well. And then you'll move. So it doesn't build relationships and longevity in the marketplace. So first of all, and that value section is the philosophy and understanding of value, but also models to be able to understand and calculate value through value onions and so on. Section 2 then goes into the whole how to set up a plan and execute a strategy with value at its center and value centricity. So it's a whole strategic process, step by step by step. It takes you through examples of organizations where you've done it and what happened, but gives you, you know, you actually don't need me in a way. You know, I wish you do. By all means, call me. But you know, in a way, it's, so that gives you the step by step technique. And the interesting thing is here, before I tell you the other 3 sections. When I was in Crete about a year and a half ago, sitting on a beach, finishing off the book on my own, off season, beautiful. I think I was the only person in the hotel. And my publisher called and said, Sanjeev, actually at that time it was 650 pages. And he said, Sanjeev, it's too long. And I said, okay, what do you want to do, Andrew? He said, well, let's put it into 2 volumes. And commercially, he was thinking as well, which made sense. And I said, okay, how do you want to split it? He said, well, you know, I love the book. It's, you know, it's very clear that you've got the philosophy and the ideology, and then you've got the method and technique, and there is the split. So make volume 1, the ideology and philosophy, and then the second volume, the methodology and the technique. And I said, okay, fine, fair enough. Next morning, Michelle, I woke up and I called him and I said, Andrew, I haven't been able to sleep all night. No way. I'm not going to cheat my audience. I'm not going to tell them what to do without telling them how to do it. It's just not right. Otherwise, this becomes a moral lecture. And it really isn't. So section 2 gives you that methodology. Section 3 is fine. We know what value is. I've given you the strategy and the planning and the method. Now, do you have the gumption? Is your mind in the right place? Is it in the wrong place? So section 3 is about getting the mind to work beautifully with availability, aligned, peaceful, and really powerful, and using its best and not in fears and worries and concerns. So it sets the mind right. Then comes section 4, which is all about leadership and to be a value leader and to become the bringer of value to your total people environment, not just this way, of course, this way, but this way and outwards and customers and every, how to become a leader of, because you are a leader when you are serving value. It's a very simple thing. You would follow someone naturally and voluntarily who was fulfilling your values and bringing success to you, right? So leadership is in the fourth section. The fifth section, which is super important, and just look at the progression. The fifth section is all about unity, relationships, collaboration, cooperation. And if you said to me, someone did say to me, I was in Dubai, I was doing a program for some CEOs recently on strategy. And someone said to me, Sanjeev, you go around the world, you talk to different companies. And so, is there one single problem that you can see in the world? And much to his surprise, I said, yes, there is. Because he thought my answer would be, oh, where do I begin, Dr. Emma? There are lots of issues. All right, let's sit down. Let's talk about all those. And I said, no, there is one. And he said, what? Disunity. Whether you look at country level, and I'm not making any political statements here, whether you look at Brexit or whether you look at what happened in America, whether you look at what's happening in China or in Iran or in India or wherever, everywhere in the world at a country level or in Ukraine or in Russia, there's disunity. And as we come down into businesses, into corporations, and whether it's a SME, whether you're a small cafe, or a giant corporation, you'll see the chef disunited with the service people, you know, and not working in collaboration. So section five is solving that, but it comes after we've talked about value and strategy in the mind and leadership. So it's that flow, and if you follow that flow, actually you're done. You really are done.
Nice, love it.
It's so transformational.
I love it. And I know that our listeners are going to want more from you. So how do they start that journey with you?
Oh, you know, first of all, to thank you, because it's thanks to platforms and the great work that I've seen your podcast, Michelle, and it's just such a joy to talk to you. So there, of course, be in touch with me. My website is, may I say it?
Of course.
It's called valuepreneurship.com. Nice. So you can find me there or LinkedIn, Sanjeev Lumba. The book is on Amazon. Anywhere you can find me, but you know, there are resources, there's videos, etc. that are available. LinkedIn, I'm putting a lot of stuff out on. Reach out. Any way I can help, I'm there for you. It's kind of a flame that I've taken up in life to reshape business and the way it's done and to bring a lot of success, of course. Yeah,
I love it. And we will, of course, have all of your links in the show notes. So peeps, you know how to get there. Just scroll down, go to the show notes, click in a new browser because we still have things to hear here. So I get to ask you, at what point in life did you know that you were a special kind of crazy enough to think that you could become an entrepreneur?
Wow, man. you know, I think it was that time when I was working at the age of 21 for that accounting company as a junior auditor. And Michelle, because of this potentialitis disease, I named my company at that time. My company is called The Real Potential. Although the company didn't happen for another 15 years because I wanted to do my corporate career, but that corporate career was designed to take me there. So I actually on purpose said, I'm going to be finance director, then I'm going to be marketing director, then I'm going to be CEO, and I'm going to work in different industries and different countries. This was my university. So my taste for saying that there is a better way to do this came at that age. I was actually trained. I was just about to train to become a doctor, and I have so much respect for that profession because my father was a doctor, and as I credit in my book that he was the first valuepreneur I ever knew, because there are stories. We lived in India at that time. I lived in India to the age of 10. Then we came to the UK. And there are stories that he was a surgeon and he's operating with one hand. and the blood has run out for the patient, and he was a group O, so universal donor, and blood is going out of one hand to the patient and he's operating with the other. And you know, this is the kind of crazy obsession of value that I was kind of brought up with. So it's nothing to do with me. I've just seen this around me, you know, so it gave me a taste for that. Yeah.
That is wild and amazing and awesome. And I could talk to you all day, I assure you. But you've been absolutely awesome. Any last words for our peeps?
No, I'm touched by people who take up the flame of making their path. And that's why I absolutely adore entrepreneurs, SMEs, and scaling them is my job and my life. But my begging message to everyone is to say, look at the world, look at your business the right way around. Make the culture of your business valuepreneurial. Look at it the right way around. There's a little exercise which takes you 5 minutes, which shows you how valuepreneurial you are on the website, like on the second page. It's just for fun, you know, go for it. And just look at the world the right way around. You'll do work where you'll feel you're doing it with more integrity because you're bringing value. And your team will be far more engaged. It's fulfilling. And of course, it'll make you wealthier.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And I know how valuable it is.
Oh, no, thank you so much, Michelle. And you brought stuff out of me that I didn't even know that I had inside me. Thank you very much.
I love it. Peeps, thank you so much for being here today. Be sure to subscribe to the show and share it with your friends. We love helping entrepreneurs grow.
Are you running a business over 7 figures but still struggling with technology headaches? Pay attention. You do not want to miss this offer. This podcast episode is brought to you by Awareness Strategies, who is offering a custom-built digital adoption roadmap for anyone running a business over 7 figures who's wanting to grow their business in the next 5 years. And it's not just a roadmap. They offer full implementation as well. If that scares the out of you, check out awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap for more details today. The link's in the show's notes. Don't regret not doing this. Do it now. That's awarenessstrategies.com/roadmap.